This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This is a very satisfying period for Elvis Costello fans. At the end of 1993, a box set reissue was released called 2.5 Years, featuring his first three albums, a live 1978 concert recording, and previously unissued home recordings. This year, he released a new album called Brutal Youth that reunited him with his band The Attractions. Nick Lowe, who produced Costello's first five albums, played bass on several tracks. On this archive edition of Fresh Air, we're featuring interviews with Nick Lowe and Elvis Costello.
Now that your picture's in the paper being perfectly admired, you can have it, the one that you have ever desired. All you gotta tell me now is why, why.
When Elvis Costello's first album, My Aim Is True, was released in 1977, it demanded your attention. Costello had punk's pent-up energy and a songwriter's gift for music and lyrics. Even his cover photo was intriguing. He had Presley's name, Buddy Holly's glasses, and the pose of a 1950s rocker. When I spoke with him in 1989, I asked him about that photo on his first album, and he told me his image in that photo was totally unplanned.
When I first started, I remember as doing that photo session. I had two jackets at this point. That's all I had, two jackets. You know, I was trying them on, and we did some shots with this tweed jacket. And that, even considering I was wearing horn rims, that seemed a little bit too serious. So I put on this other jacket, kind of a mohair jacket, and I said, "We're happening now." And I had my electric guitar, which we didn't have plugged in, so that immediately makes it kind of comical. I think all I remember is the photographer Keith Morris and my manager, both of them guzzling bottles of cider, which was our chosen drink because it was very cheap, sort of all going, go on, throw the funny legs, you know, do some of those rock and roll, but kind of as a send-up of that. You know?
Yeah.
So contrary to the image of the intense, sort of furious young man that's often written about in such romantic terms by rock critics, we were having a joke at the expense of all that imagery, and people fail to see the gag, you know, obviously, because you're frozen there for a moment, and it came to represent something else, because the music obviously wasn't humorous like that. It was aggressive, you know, so there's a curious little inside story. You know?
Elvis Costello recorded in 1989. Earlier this year, he joined us again on Fresh Air to talk about his latest CD, Brutal Youth, and his box set reissue. I asked him about his song Just About Glad, my favorite track on his recent CD, which we'll hear in a minute.
It's a funny song because it very nearly didn't make the record.
Why not? I like it a lot.
I do as well. But
I even like the expression Just About Glad.
Yeah, and likewise. I had a little difficulty finding, sometimes you make a track and when you play it on its own, it sounds just fine.
Uh-huh.
And then you try to find where you put it on the record, and that's less easy. You seems like every track you put it next to, you know, it seems to make the track before sound slow or it sounds like just wrong in some way. And it took quite a long time until we found just the right place to stick it on the record. We're Just About Glad. I mean, the story is concerned with somebody. I mean, it certainly couldn't have been written by a 22-year-old. It's about somebody who meets an old acquaintance with whom he almost had an affair or some kind of scene. And all the time he's saying, oh, well, I'm just about glad we never did that. You know, we never did this. And really you get the feeling as the song goes on that he's secretly really sorry that it never happened, although the girl perhaps is deeply relieved.
Well, I like the song a lot. Why don't we hear it? This is Elvis Costello from his new album, Brutal Youth. The song is Just About Glad.
I'm just about glad that I knew you once, and it was more than just a passing acquaintance. I'm just about glad that it was a memory that doesn't need constant maintenance. There are a few things that I regret, but nothing that I need to forget. For all of the courage that we never had, I'm just about glad. That's it. Just about glad we didn't
Elvis Costello from his new album, Brutal Youth. A recently Ryko disc released a 4-CD box set of reissues of your early albums with previously unreleased tracks. And it's been very interesting for me to hear that because I hear things about your music that I had heard about before but never could really understand. For instance, I know that you'd said that you'd played at folk clubs and that you used to perform with just a guitar. I can never imagine that until I heard some of these home recordings with just you and a guitar. So I want to talk to you about some of those recordings. Can we go back to, I guess it was the 70s when you made them?
Yeah, it would have been about 1976 or even 75. I don't really remember when I recorded them. They were really just my first demo tape that was recorded on it, on anything decent. You know, you always have some kind of tape recorder. Of course, tape recorders then were like big bulky things and not the little convenient devices they are now. And, you know, you start to sound like very ancient when you talk like this, but it's the truth. And it was just recorded in my bedroom, and I sent those songs around. And now when I listen to them, I can understand why, you know, I wasn't immediately signed up. I don't think that's because they're necessarily terrible songs, but I think they're obviously, they don't demand your attention in quite the same way as perhaps the songs on the first album proper do.
Well, let me stop you there, because one of the songs that you record, that you have a home recording of with just you and a guitar, is Mystery Dance, which is on your first recording.
Oh, yeah, yeah, well, that's what I mean. You can see that I was obviously just on the verge of discovering, if style is perhaps not the right word, because a lot of the songs are very different from one another, but more the attitude with which I could put the song over and hold people's attention. I'm very fond, in a slightly embarrassed way, about some of those very, very early songs, the more gentle ones, simply because, like any work by somebody, the very first things they do, you can really hear how you're trying to imitate such and such a singer, and mm-hmm. how you're really trying to imitate such and such a songwriter. And, of course, by getting it slightly wrong, you're actually being original. But at the time, you don't realize, you know.
Right.
Whereas with Mystery Dance, obviously, that's a song which in itself is not wholly original musically, because it's a typical rock and roll structure, but it has that edge thing that obviously people responded to in the first album.
Well, you mentioned you know, your attitude, that you were just trying, forming your attitude on these early recordings. I think the attitude on the previously unreleased version of Mystery Dance and the kind of full rock band version of Mystery Dance is different. In the home recording, you sound like you're... Mystery Dance is a song about sexual frustration, about not being able, not knowing how to do it. And in the version with just you and a guitar, you sound kind of ironic and confused. Mm. But in the band version, there's this incredible, like, pent-up frustration in it. And I think the attitudes are different.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because I haven't really played them back, you know, considered them like that. I was just amazed that the tape had even survived.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it is quite a while ago. And it was actually played on the radio. It was the very first thing of mine that was ever played anywhere on the radio, that tape. And there's a gentleman called Charlie Gillett who's had a small record label, and he's written some very good books about music, and is a passionate guy about music and has always championed all kinds of different musics. And he had a radio program on a local radio station, BBC radio station, but the local London station. And he occasionally played tapes that were sent in. And in fact, another tape I know he did play was like a demo version of Dire Straits when they were just sort of starting out.
Well, I want to play your home recording back-to-back with the version from your first album, My Aim Is True.
And let people be the judge.
Yeah, I like them both. This is Elvis Costello.
Romeo was restless, he was ready to kill. He jumped out the window cause he couldn't sit still. Juliet was waiting with the safety net and said, don't bury me cause I'm not dead yet. Why don't you tell me about the mystery dance? I wanna know about the mystery dance. Why don't you show me? Cause I tried and I'm still mystified. I can't do it anymore and I'm not satisfied. Romeo was restless, he was ready to kill. He jumped out the window cause he couldn't sit still. Juliet was waiting with a safety net. Said, don't bury me cause I'm not dead yet. Why don't you tell me about the mystery dance? I wanna know about the mystery dance. Why don't you show me? Cause I tried and I'm still mystified. I can't do it anymore and I'm not satisfied. Well, I remember.
two versions of Elvis Costello's Mystery Dance from his recent box set recording called 2.5 Years. Now, something else that was previously unreleased that's featured on this box set is Wave a White Flag, a song of yours that sounds to me like it almost has roots in like music hall type songs. This song is so kind of removed from the type of song you usually write, musically anyways.
Well, you know, one of my favorite writers then and still now was Randy Newman.
Mm-hmm.
And I really admired him and still do. And, you know, if you don't play the piano, it's extremely difficult to get that kind of...
almost vaudevillian.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's kind of a ragtime style, you know, and the closest I could get to it was really in a couple of those songs. And I don't want to make too much of them because, I mean, obviously they are very early tunes, so they seem a little halting at times, you know, but that one definitely was because, I mean, sometimes Randy Newman around that time was writing songs where, you know, if people heard them at face value, they'd be deeply shocked by what they were saying until you realise he was being ironic, because irony isn't a quality which is, you know, it's not everybody's experience. And I would imagine that's what I was trying to do. Although, as I say, it's a little hard to remember now.
Well, let's hear Wave a White Flag, and this is one of the previously unreleased recordings on the Elvis Costello box set 2.5 Years. A home recording.
Take off your shoes, hang up your wings, stack up the chairs, roll up the rug, savor the things that sobriety brings, draining the last from a jug. But when I hit the bottle, there's no telling what I'll do. There's something deep inside me wants to turn you black and blue. I can't resist you, I can't wait to twist your loving arms till you capitulate. Beat me.
That's Elvis Costello, a home recording from the 1970s, now released on the box set 2.5 Years. Did you perform a lot as a solo player when you were getting started, just you and your guitar?
Yeah, I mean, the first time I ever appeared in public, it was as a solo, you know, in a folk club. And I did a lot of that, both in London and in Liverpool. And I was also in a couple of bands, you know, but obviously semi-professional ones. And they changed in style from week to week as we kind of mastered things and as we learned things. And because when, you know, you're sort of 17, 18, 19, you're very impressionable of the things. You hear something, you immediately want to play like that, you know, and that mm-hmm. becomes the main thing you want to do. And then a little bit later, you sort of get a little confidence that actually there's this one style or a couple of styles that you feel that you have something special to offer to and start following those. So, you know, I had done a lot of those sort of things. And so I'd had both experiences, really. But you know, I hadn't much experience of playing in rock and roll bands until I was in one really properly, you know.
My guest is Elvis Costello. We'll be back after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Elvis Costello. He's got a new album called Brutal Youth. How did you get your first guitar?
My first guitar, my mother and father bought me in Spain when I was very young. I think about 9, and I couldn't play it, and it was just a little, like a small Spanish guitar. And when I was about 14, I started, or 13 or 14, I started to pick it up. And I even put steel strings on it, which, of course, immediately makes it go completely warped, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, I saved up my money and bought an acoustic, you know, like a folk singer's guitar, and just worked with that for some time. And then later on, you know, when I was a little older, when I was about 17, I got an electric guitar. That's about it, really. I mean, I with the band I was in when I first came to live in London... Our drummer worked for a music store, and he was able to get discounts on guitars. But unfortunately, you just had to accept whichever model came from the factory, you know. And although
right.
all guitars are made on assembly lines these days, there are some differences between one and another. And in an ideal situation, you would try out the guitar. So my first serious electric guitar that I ever had was a Fender, which came in a cardboard box unopened from the factory. And I took it out, and it, you know, the action, the relationship of the strings to the fretboard was worse than the cheap Japanese guitar I'd been playing for the previous 5 years. But I didn't actually know you could change it, so I persevered with that guitar. In fact, I played it on half of the first album.
Oh, you're kidding?
And somebody with the other guitar player that John McPhee who played on that record looked at my guitar and said, why don't you adjust this, because it must be so hard to play. And I didn't even know you could, because, like I say, I started with the folk guitar, and I never sat down and tried to work out Jimi Hendrix solos or anything like that,
right, like a lot
of my friends did. And it was just a tool, you know, that you could accompany yourself on. An electric guitar was just like an acoustic guitar, except louder. And then I traded it in halfway through the first album sessions, because they were done in, like, you know, little sessions of 3 or 4 hours whenever I was I could take days off my day job. And I traded it in for a Jazzmaster guitar, which is the one that's been the mainstay kind of guitar that I've used ever since.
I know your father sang in with bands. He was a band singer.
Yeah, with one band, really, most of the time.
And which band was it?
It was the Joe Loss Orchestra.
So he sang, like, pop standards?
Well, I suppose when he started in the 50s, it would have been much more the typical big band ballad. But a lot of those bands kind of folded up in that time, obviously, as the guitar-based music took over more.
Yeah.
You know, that was death for really those big bands, which were obviously modelled on sort of like the Glenn Miller sound or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Joe Loss and his arrangers were very, very shrewd, and they managed to kind of absorb a lot of the music. And my father is a very versatile singer, and they did the most unlikely covers. You know, they used to cover very contemporary pop records, and, you know, they would do things like See Emily Play by Pink Floyd, you know, with these outlandish arrangements. I mean, I said to Dave Gilmour about that I had this. I know he didn't play on that record, but I told him this. I said, I bet you any money the original Pink Floyd couldn't play See Emily Play live, because it's a very complex arrangement. It was a studio creation. And here I've got this tape of a radio broadcast from 1968 with my father singing it with this extraordinary band arrangement. It's very bizarre, you know, quite surreal.
Did you share musical taste with him, or did you rebel against his songs?
They both really love jazz, and singers such as Ella Fitzgerald and Sinatra and people like that. So I didn't really have any feeling of rebellion against that, because that was the music that was in the house when I was really little. And then, it obviously, like most people, you get to a certain age where you assert your own choice about music, and that happened to be right at a great period of English pop music, you know, with the Beatles and mm-hmm. all of that sort of stuff, which they also liked. I can't ever remember them not liking something that was good. I dare say my father had to sing sometimes a song that he didn't care for. And my mother, you know, on the other hand, liked a lot of classical music and took me to concerts when I was little. So I got a little taste for that. So I nothing really seemed like off limits, or as if it didn't really belong to me, or I was prejudiced against it.
When you started to sing, did your father think you had what it takes? Or did he not take your voice seriously?
No, he was very encouraging. You know, both my parents were. I never let them come and see me, but...
You wouldn't let them come and see
not
you?
Not when I first started out, no.
Well, because you were... Why?
Well, I suppose you just wanted to learn how to do it first, and uh-huh. it was kind of embarrassing. But later on, you know, they come to see me play now, and, you know, I can talk about the records with them that I make now.
Would it have been embarrassing early on to have your parents show up at a gig?
Oh, God, I think it would be for anybody, you know, sort of 16 or 17, you know. And my son plays in a band now, and I went to see him play recently, but I had to creep in the back door in disguise.
That's funny, you having to sneak in through mm-hmm. the back door. So how famous was your father when he was singing with the band?
Among a certain kind of... clientele for that, for dance music, you know, they were pretty well known. I mean, they were one of the better known... Certainly the orchestra was very well known in the country.
Did changing your name have anything to do with wanting to be independent from your father's reputation?
Oh, no, not really. It wasn't like a Frank Sinatra Jr. situation.
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean, he had had some success. They didn't do that many recordings, so that meant that the fame really revolved around the live performance in dance halls. There were a few recordings, and he did have one hit record in Germany under his own name, as opposed to a performance with the orchestra, you know. No, not really. There wasn't any problem about that.
Did he take it personally when you changed his name? Did he want you to?
No. Funnily enough, he had already used the same surname as an alias when doing a cover record. You know, that he had done as a session singer, because he used to do some recording things under other names.
So he used Costello?
Yeah, because it's his grandmother's name.
So is that why you used it?
Yeah. Huh. No, I just plucked it out of the air.
Well, who knows? And you used Elvis because of Presley, no doubt.
Well, it was my manager's idea. I think at the time, there were people with very, very obviously fake names, you know, all the punk names.
Right.
And one certainly more enduring, I would say, better way to really, really make people sit up and take notice was to take the name, take a name that like, in most people's minds, there could only ever be one of. I mean, really, it was a statement of saying, well, here's a singular person, you know. We didn't exactly debate the significance of it beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Let me just jump ahead to the present before we run out of time. Where are you living now? Are you in Ireland?
We live in Dublin most of the time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you like it there?
It's beautiful.
And are you as well known there as you would be in London?
It's difficult to say.
Does it get in your way?
No. Recently, I don't. It's a small place, and it's very easy to become like really omnipresent, you know. And I don't really want that. It is a good place to live, where I feel like freer way to live, where I can work without interruption.
Elvis Costello recorded earlier this year. His latest CD is called Brutal Youth, and his box set reissue is called 2.5 Years. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.